the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true.
Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
Thank you. This is John Barber. That was Sarita singing Sunny with the Joe Pass Trio. And that was Frank Sinatra saying, "Here's Johnny," the night he hosted The Tonight Show. This is John Barber, and it's Shutdown Monday. It is also Mob Month in Las Vegas. Too bad it only lasts that long. If you happen to be a resident here and want a truly interesting experience, get over to the Main Library Theater tomorrow night at 7 p.m. on Flamingo. 7 p.m. on Flamingo. My co-producer and co-writer of The American Media and the Second Assassination of President John F. Kennedy, Gino Minari, a longtime successful businessman here, is giving a presentation of one of the world's greatest magicians who knew all the crooks and crowns around the world. His name, Jimmy Grippo, the resident magician at Caesar's Palace for over 20 years. Don't miss it. The Flamingo Library Theater tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And welcome to John Barber's World, live from Las Vegas, not one of America's shitholes. Just give it time. Folks, as somebody who was in the news for a number of years, I can tell you, you must prepare yourself for a shitstorm from the once proper English pious news shows. You all know the dam of restraint was finally broken by them a few days ago in their attempt to denigrate or applaud and quote accurately President Trump. His comments hit the freedom for shit fan. The outrage of the media turned into bullshit the next morning when the CEOs of the six corporations that own our media saw their ratings and their profits skyrocket. They looked at that and said, "Holy shit." So this much maligned, most used adjective, verb, and noun in the English language will soon be a tsunami of smut flooding our rube tubes to describe every aspect of our limping leadership and collapsing, denigrating culture. As usual, the New York Times will lead us off by leading us down their shithole of truth by declaring, "All the news that shit to print." Half of our politicians who are known falling down drunks will be named actually like Africa and Haiti so they can properly be identified as shit-faced. Seeing his publicity skyrocket, Trump will no longer refer to Obamacare as unworkable, but just as a shitty program. And if North Korea tests another missile, instead of telling us he has a bigger red button, he'll tell us how he's going to scare the shit out of them. It'll be the calm before the shitstorm. In his high-priced talks, George Bush will no longer just refer to the Constitution as a goddamn piece of shit, as a piece of paper, but now as a piece of shit. And newscasters who never so much once called him a liar over Iraq's non-existent WMDs will now happily shout out, "He was and is full of shit." If Oprah runs in 2020 versus Donald, she'll tell us he turned the White House into a shit house. Of course, Trump will retort with his mastery of the obvious, "She's just another tub of shit." If any candidate comes along advocating peace, the media will denounce them immediately as shit for brains. Most movies and TV shows will no longer require long, in-depth analysis. They'll be mostly described as just a piece of shit. And believe me, seeing how over the years, since John Kennedy's murder, and Martin Luther King's murder, how far America and the media have slid down this shithole, that lively little four-letter word will be so overused and burned out that those once holier-than-thou and smarter-than-thou news folk will trot out the dreaded F-word. It's coming. No shit. Then if Trump puts his tiny hand on the red nuclear button in response to North Korea's leader's big mouth and incinerates the world and himself, instead of sending him to hell, God will confront him in person saying, how is it possible you could so miscalculate and destroy my globe, my magnificent, wonderful work, a trillion times greater than yours? And Trump will just shrug and say, hey, shit happens. Well, it looks like this hour is going to turn into the Trump hour, beginning with my two magnificent guests, my two favorite people, and two of my favorite writers who turn real shit into must-read fertilizer. After a year of intensive research, 2 weeks ago, they finally published a long-hidden court case about our White House's Judge Moore that is raising a shitstorm in some quarters. From D.C., the co-author and founder of the highly respected Necessary Justice Integrity Project, Andrew Craig, and from Florida, the co-author and author of numerous other first-time newsmaking stories, one of the last and best investigative reporters in America, creator of the Madsen Report, Wayne Madsen. Wayne, welcome to the show. Andrew, welcome to the show. It's a delight to talk to you both, but it's more of a delight to be listening to you. How are the both of you? First of all, Andrew in D.C., how are you?
Oh, I'm thrilled and honored to be on the show, so I'm feeling great, John.
Well, I'm thrilled and honored to be talking to you again. One of the greatest joys I've had this past couple of years was meeting you in D.C. when we were promoting the film. And it's an honor again also to be talking to Wayne in Tampa, Florida. Wayne, how are you?
Good, John. It's good to be back on the program. And something you said in the intro about magic acts at Caesar's Palace, I'm a witness to it because I actually witnessed my money disappear into thin air when I was last out in Caesar's Palace.
And a lot of winners disappeared into the desert, by the way.
Justifiably so.
Yes, that's true. Anyway, to this unbelievable story that I've read a half a dozen times. First of all, I'll start with you, Wayne. How is it that you locked on to or happened to hear about a story like this? Because first of all, you have to somehow hear about it, and then you have to have some sort of feeling that it's true in order for you to invest your time. So how did it come about?
Well, the basis of the story I was, we were both aware of back during the election campaign of 2016, because during the year, there were two lawsuits filed by a person who we first knew as Jane Doe, and later by the name Katie Johnson. The first one was filed in California. It was refiled in New York, where she alleged in the lawsuit that when she was 13 years old, back in 1993, she was basically recruited by somebody sent out to recruit young girls while she was at the 42nd Street bus station, the Port Authority bus station in Manhattan, and invited to a party at the townhouse in Midtown on Fifth Avenue that was owned then by a guy named Les Wexner, but the guy who actually lived there was this guy, Jeffrey Epstein, a billionaire investor.
Is that the guy that had that sex island somewhere in the Caribbean?
Yes, they called it a sex island. It was a private island, Little St. James Island, which is part of the U.S. Virgin Islands territory. And anyway, this gal, Katie Johnson, a.k.a. Jane Doe, said that she was at several parties at the Wexner Mansion, and at one of them she was sodomized, raped, basically, by Jeffrey Epstein and a friend of his, a guy named Donald Trump.
And this is in those court records?
Yes, it is. She said something even more astounding. She said at one of these get-togethers, Trump said to her, "If you ever say anything about this, you'll wind up like Maria." Now, Katie Johnson had seen Maria at previous parties. She knew Maria was only 12 years old had also been sodomized by allegedly by Epstein and Donald Trump. And you would take that. Now, this is during the campaign. So we have this reference to Maria, 12-year-old girl, allegedly, you know, raped by the Republican presidential candidate. And so this lawsuit was basically refiled. There was supposed to be just a few days before the election in November, before the November 8th election, there was supposed to be a news conference with Katie Johnson and her then attorney, Lisa Bloom, who was more widely as the legal expert that was always on NBC, CNBC, MSNBC. Anyway, Katie Johnson pulls the lawsuit citing threats against her and her family as a reason. There had already been a conference scheduled in Manhattan by U.S. Judge Ronnie Abrams, Southern District of New York, for December 16th. Of course, that was canceled when Katie Johnson pulls the lawsuit. And ironically, December 16th was the day the Electoral College met and, you know, confirmed Trump as the president.
Do you think there was a possibility she or her family were paid off?
We're not certain of that, and we're still looking into that. But the more astounding thing is when you read this transcript and she cites Trump as saying, you know, if you ever talk, you'll wind up like Maria, who she knew was 12 years old. You would take that as, well, maybe Maria was knocked off. And based on a tip I received a few months back probably the end, beginning of autumn, probably before that, it was still, I think, late summer, I got a tip that this Maria is still alive.
Wow.
And she's, of course, also is fearful, as is Katie Johnson. And so that set about a series of events where Andy and I went up to where Maria was last seen in Waterbury, Connecticut.
Okay. You know, ordinarily, when you have researched and reported these stories, they've never been refuted. Not one of your stories has been refuted by anyone factually. How did you happen to, I know you and Andrew have been friends for years, how did you happen to decide to work with Andrew on this? And once you tell me that, Andrew, tell me what happened when you went to Waterbury. So first, Wayne, how did you happen to decide to team up with Andrew?
Well, Andrew has a background in journalism with the Hartford Courant, the oldest paper in North America, in Connecticut. So, you know, I mean, why reinvent the wheel? He knows the wheels and journalism up there. And so it was, plus we've been on some road trips together, and, you know, I'm not saying it's exciting as the Blues Brothers, but, you know, we try, you know,
the best. And Andrew, okay, tell me what happened when Wayne told you he'd like you to work with them and be the journalist Blues Brothers. What happened? Were you as familiar with the case then as he was? And what happened when you went to Waterbury?
Well, as a bit of background, we've both looked at these sex cases as important parts of American politics, because it's not only allegedly despicable behavior, but we both believe, after looking into a number of these, that it's a control mechanism by extremely powerful people to compromise important people with sex or money or both, and control them, and basically blackmail officials into using government offices or other powers to benefit those who have the information. And so anybody who's watched movies can imagine that, but it's actually happening in America, and so that's part of the motivation. And Wayne is one of the great experts at smoking that out, writing it, and I'm a researcher on that, but I'm nowhere near as prolific as Wayne. But we've both for years looked into this particular situation. So we're heading up to Connecticut, and just to give you a little bit of the flavor, your listeners a little bit of the flavor of it, you know, although Wayne and I have worked together, everybody's got different styles, so I'm tending to be a little bit like, let's plan it and let's get my contacts up in Connecticut to know we're coming. And Wayne is a racehorse, so let's get up there and let's get out on the street and find out what the heck is going on. So we head up, and we head out to the street, and we fan out, and we find find a bunch of things about this case. And by the way, I'm not sure we've mentioned the title of the story that we ultimately did, but just to frame it for your listeners, and it is on your website, but the title is Welcome to Waterbury, the City Whose Secrets Could Bring Trump Down. That's the way it turned out, but there were a number of surprises.
Why Waterbury? Because I got the impression, reading the article, that the girl just disappeared from Waterbury.
Well, she disappeared, but we thought, let's find where she was kidnapped from, which is Waterbury. So we went up there to try to retrace.
She was actually kidnapped?
She was kidnapped. And so what we did was...
By the way, she was 11 years old when she was kidnapped.
Yeah.
Oh, my God almighty. Then how would she have ended up at a bus stop on 42nd Street?
No, that's the other girl.
Of course,
that was the other girl.
Oh, I see.
Was obviously trafficked by child sex traffickers. The question is, how did she wind up in a billionaire's mansion in Midtown Manhattan, where Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein were?
There are two questions that come up immediately. You were very articulate, both of you, in describing how all this happened back in 1993, and they are actually court records. Now, that should have been well known, but obviously was not reported by anybody. Why would it take you a year of investigating this case if so much of the information was available in 1993? And then, of course, with what's happening with the beginning of the collapse of this kind of behavior by the powerful since the producer Weinstein case, how come your wonderful story with all this information is not all over the mainstream media, where there would be an appetite for it? And it doesn't seem to be even in the media that is not fans of Trump's. Why is that?
Well, let me tackle at least the first part. so the girl is kidnapped, and there's,
right,
you know, it's a local police story, girl missing. And nobody, there's very few details out about it. And certainly as years passed, very little reason for anybody to look into it until Wayne got a tip. And he got the tip because Wayne has been doing this type of story for many years. And one of his, somebody remembered that Wayne is a person who has done this kind of story and contacted him and said, basically, a girl who's in this very important Katie Johnson case is from Waterbury and was kidnapped. So that's about the information we had when we had it up there. Maybe a little bit more. But we decided to go to the part of the city where she was kidnapped from, and old-fashioned Columbo TV show type of shoe leather, and just talk to people. And we encountered a member of the family that delivered the first big surprise, which was total astonishment that she's alive.
You're talking about Maria.
Yeah.
You're talking about Maria. Oh, my God almighty.
And so what we had thought was, let's go up there. She's probably got some relatives and maybe even friends, even though it's 25 years ago. And we'll find the friends. And since our information was that she's alive, maybe she's living in Connecticut. And then we'll work with the police and, you know, the mayor's office, and we'll convince her that, you know, we can help her get her story out. Or
But Andrew, do you sincerely believe that if you locate this girl, that the local police and the local press there would assist you guys in pursuing this case if it leads to the White House? Do you really?
Well, we're
think
going.
Would... We're,
well, you're getting a, you're getting to some of our punchlines here, John.
Okay.
We're the naive reporters starting out on the road trip without a lot of preconceptions. You know, we're up there to go to the home state of the kidnapped girl and find her. And one of the things that we found was people didn't know she was alive. And then we go to the police department and we get the runaround. That goes to your point. And we're like, you know, I'd cover, as a reporter, one of the things you do, you work your way up the ladder. So I had covered the police department in the biggest city for 2 years. So I know how to cover the police department. You go in, you act nice, you get the reports. And then for 5 years, I covered the federal court system. So I worked with the FBI, the U.S. attorney, who at that point was Richard Blumenthal. He's now a U.S. senator. And I talked to people all day, every day. And we're getting the total runaround from the Waterbury Police Department. Oh, you got to go over here. You got to go over there. You got to go over there. Oh, only the police chief can give you the report. When's he back? Well, he's out, you know. You know, we go to the mayor's office. Well, he's out. You know, we leave our number. You know, nobody calls back. Corporation counsel. And then nobody wants to deliver any basic information about the kidnapped girl. So we're not even getting into the Trump, the Epstein, or anything like that. We're just, you know, a couple of reporters. And then the corporation counsel, she doesn't want to meet with us, but then she kind of picks a fight with me over the phone, and she says, I think you guys, you got a bad attitude. You know, I was prepared to say, welcome to Waterbury, but I guess not, you know. And Wayne's listening to this, and that's where our title comes from. Welcome to Waterbury. It's not a welcome. And then she says, you know, maybe we've destroyed all the records. And I said, so you, right. so you got a missing girl.
Let me interrupt for just a second, Andrew. Okay. Yeah. You're looking for Maria.
Yeah.
But will the finding of Maria, so this question is now directed to Wayne. If you're looking for Maria, is it your hope that if you find her, that she either agrees to say something to you on the record, and is it your hope that the original girl who in 1993 went public with her claims of being sodomized by Trump and Epstein or whatever his name is, is it your hope that that girl, at once at 13, now a woman, will refile so that the world will know what Trump did if he did it?
Yeah, that would be a good outcome because, you know, Katie Johnson, who filed the lawsuit, I mean, recall that when Katie Johnson files the lawsuit, this is after Jeffrey Epstein gets a sweetheart deal in Florida back about 10 or so years ago with this Lolita Express, is, you know, flying underage girls around the country, around the world. He's known by the West Palm Beach Police Department.
Has he ever been charged or arrested?
Yes, he was charged. He did a sweetheart plea deal with the connivance of the U.S. Attorney for Southern Florida, where he agreed to plead to a felony, one count of soliciting sex from a 14-year-old girl. His sentence was 13 months, where he only had to check into the prison, the county prison, in the evening, and in the morning he could go off on his, you know, do whatever he wanted.
Oh,
now,
this was
hammered out by the U.S. Attorney for Southern Florida, Alex Acosta, who now just so happens to be Donald Trump's labor secretary.
Your listeners are not totally familiar with this, we just got to say Epstein has conducted himself as a billionaire for years, and he hobnobs with British royalty, movie stars. There's many, many incidents of
Kevin Spacey being one of them.
Then this is a rhetorical question, and I ask it because I know what I would do if I had a daughter. I'm sure that the fathers of some of these girls who were molested and raped and sodomized by either him or his cronies, they must know it's him. Why is this man still alive?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, and we're not talking about one or two, or, you know, originally we knew about Jane Doe's 1 through 4. One of which was recruited while she was, I think, 15 years old, working as a towel girl at Mar-a-Lago. Now, Jeffrey Epstein's place in Palm Beach is not very far from Mar-a-Lago. You could walk it, okay? Donald Trump has admitted on several occasions he was a friend of Jeffrey Epstein. He had been over to his house. He said, "I know he likes some kind of young." Hint, hint, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod. But go ahead.
I'm sorry. Didn't Bill Clinton admit that he was also at this sex island?
He was on the Epstein plane, as was Alan Dershowitz and I believe Prince Andrew, the Duke of York.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, Epstein's black book is a... He's got Trump's number. He's got, there's messages that, you know, with Donald Trump left with Ivanka, with, you know, all the Trumps, Ivana, the wife number one. But, you know, when the U.S. judge in West Palm Beach in the federal courthouse unsealed some records in the Epstein case, which his lawyers, which included Ken Starr and Alan Dershowitz, they fought against that, but the judge ordered them released. I was there that very day on the computer terminals in the courthouse, and I saw a reference to Jane Doe 103,
Oh, my God almighty.
Which means and that Jane Doe is between 1 and 103.
I think
before you and Andrew put it out on the Madsen Report, I mean, this is a monumental story. Did you submit it to either Ramparts Magazine or Rolling Stone or, God forbid, at least the National Enquirer?
Well, the National Enquirer is totally in bed with Trump. They would not touch it. They knew about this, by the way. They've known about it.
Wayne's laughing, John. I think I can say this: is the National Enquirer called Wayne for today for information on another story? But so when he said, "Is that all right to say?"
Go ahead.
Go ahead. They called you about another story?
Well, the Enquirer used to call me quite regularly for comments on various stories, including the one that got all the attention during the election campaign, the one about Rafael Cruz, Ted Cruz's father from Cuba, being possibly one of the people whose picture was taken standing next to Oswald in front of the trademark New Orleans.
Three months before the assassination.
Did they ever call you about your revelations about Obama's membership in the gay clubs in Chicago, which may have resulted?
Yes, and I was quoted about that as well. They even quoted the mother of the choir director at Jeremiah's Rights Church.
Who was that guy that used to be on Jeff Rentz's show all the time that claimed that he had
Larry Sinclair.
Yes, whatever happened to Larry Sinclair?
Well, he's living in Florida over on the, the Cocoa Beach area, or maybe the Canaveral area. No, he's still around. He's just not, I don't think he's doing the kind of the media stuff he used to do.
To your point, John, we share, particularly after seeing your very powerful lecture and film in Washington at its premieres in November in D.C., we share your skepticism about the American media, and it's really threading the needle to get investigative stories out. In this case, one of the changes in our plan and view was when we saw a number of sensitivities or complexities of this story, we changed our original view, which was to try to reach out to the mainstream media on this, which we thought it was very important to do, but we decided to publish first on the Wayne Madsen Report and Justice Integrity Project.
What has been the response to it? I mean, I've read it 7 times, I've shared it, and I've sent it to everybody, but I can't find it anywhere in what passes for mainstream media. I can't even find it in what they call the alternative media.
Well, no. It's been pretty good. It's gotten about 300 Facebook likes and several thousand, probably 4,500 hits on the Justice Integrity site. Wayne's gotten a good reaction. Here's the thing about it. You know the concept of cognitive dissonance or something like that.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And to some extent, people are nervous about it because they don't see it on the mainstream, so they kind of think, well, it can't be
true. That's exactly right. They have nobody to lead them to the truth trough.
Now, you know, I'll just add, when I wrote the original article exposing Dennis Hastert as a pedophile in 2006, and they waited how many years?
10 years.
Wayne did a three-part series
on that in 2006. And then it wasn't for 10 years later until he was arrested for basically money laundering.
I'm getting calls from the mainstream media all they wanted to know is who were your original sources in Illinois.
Oh my God!
And I said, "Well, lots of luck." You know,
have you thought then, fellas, of expanding Welcome to Waterbury to a book, even if you self-publish it? I mean, it seems to me you have just enough information to fill a book that's a whole lot better than.
Well, we're working. Yeah, we're working very hard on that, and we're coming up with new information, and we'll be ramping it up. By the way, we did get a call from one of the biggest European broadcast networks. Maybe I won't mention which one they are, but. Wayne and I, particularly Wayne, have been through this before, and what they want, as he said on his Dennis Hassard story, they want our sources, which we can't give them, and then ultimately, even if they're well-intended,
you know,
they
want to
take the story.
Oliver Stone's son, Sean, and Jesse Ventura's son, have a relatively good show on Russia
Today. It's a great show.
Have you submitted it to them for you guys to be on the show?
I've been on the show. Wayne is often has been on that network. John, what we're doing is getting the story out kind of in stages. Because ultimately, we got a plan on it. Ultimately, the girls are scared for good reason.
It's perfectly understandable.
And
perfectly.
So,
but
you
listen,
know, when
I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud that I know you so well, and I spend time with you whenever I can. Where can folks go right now when you're gone? Where can folks go to read this? I mean, other than my favorite.
I didn't like how you, when we're gone, you mean temporarily.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, you write stories like
not
this.
Not tomorrow, are you? What do you know, John?
I don't
well,
want to
you,
in Nevada.
You're both going to come back on the show often and give me updates. But I'm saying tonight, where can they go, Wayne, to...
The story is WayneMadsenReport.com, and... I have a paywall up just so I can afford to go to places like Waterbury in the wintertime.
listen, I am so glad that I'm one of your little tiny patrons, and I'll try to be a larger patron if I sell a few more videos of my my film. I want to thank you so much for both being here. Again, I'm really proud of what you have done. It's important and it's also impressive. So until we talk the next time, you guys have a wonderful night, and we'll be right back with another great journalist, my cohort, Joe Satilli.
Great music from all the greatest performers from sunup to sundown.
How do you keep the music playing?
Then, great talk all night. The mysteries of UFOs, conspiracy theories, and the true story of Las Vegas that has never been told.
There are three ways to listen to KIYQ. Go to the TuneIn app, just search for KIYQ, or go to www.kiyq.org. Listen from any telephone, call 605-477-2857. That's 605-477-2857. Long distance charges may apply.
KIYQ 107.1.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
Thank you. That smile upon your face, oh sunny.
Hi, this is John Barber. You may remember me as the co-host, producer, and creator of Real People, America's first reality show, or most recently as the writer-director of what's been called the definitive documentary on JFK's murder, The Last Word on the Assassination. Now I'm doing a show every other Monday from 5 to 6 Pacific Time on BBS. You'll hear provocative views, unreported news, and film reviews from me, with outstanding guests and you. Join me on John Barber's World.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Those of you who have an ongoing interest in the JFK assassination might want to know about this. TV producer John Barber. He put together a dream team of JFK researchers, including Coast regular Jim Mars and world-class JFK writers Dick Russell and Joan Mellon. They all got together at UNLV in front of a live audience. They had a screening of Barber's terrific, and I'd say historic, film based on interviews with prosecutor Jim Garrison of New Orleans. And then after the film was shown, the experts all talked about the latest JFK theories and evidence. It's now out on a DVD. Terrific stuff. I'm George Knack, Coast to Coast AM.
Welcome back. This is John Barber in Las Vegas, Nevada, with John Barber's World. Again, if you happen to be a resident here and you want to have a really interesting time tomorrow, I would suggest you scurry over to the main library theater on Flamingo, 7 o'clock tomorrow night, for an unbelievably interesting presentation. My co-producer and co-writer of my film, Gino Minari, a longtime successful businessman here, is doing a presentation of one of the world's greatest magicians who knew all the crooks. Since this is mob month in Las Vegas, that's why they asked him to do it. So try to get over there to see it, because I'm going to be there. Anyway, Joe, how are you? Great to talk to you again. And I love the new format of your news, Vandal. Just love it.
Yeah, well, it's much easier to view on a phone, and that had to happen. I was thinking about going to an app, and then I have a very good designer friend who we figured out the problem. We got it set. Now, here's a little small world. You know, you're talking to your previous guests about Florida, and circa 2006, in the middle of the Jack Abramoff case, I produced a story for a news magazine show that I went on to become executive producer of in Washington, D.C., called Metropolitan Edition. It was at the ABC affiliate. And the name that popped up, Wayne Madsen mentioned, was Alex Acosta. Well, he's currently the labor secretary. And when he ran into Acosta trying to track down Epstein and the Lolita Express and all of these connections with Donald Trump, and of course, Dershowitz and Bill Clinton, isn't it interesting that Dershowitz, who was very upset by the allegations in that initial lawsuit, is one of Trump's most reliable supporters on cable news. I think that's interesting. But Alex Acosta, when I ran into him, he was appointed to the Southern District of Florida as a U.S. attorney in an unapproved role, didn't go through Senate approval, based on a loophole that had been surreptitiously placed into the Patriot Act, and he went into that role and immediately put the kibosh on investigations into Jack Abramoff's connection to Sun Cruise Lines, and instead turned the attention of the Southern District of Florida away from criminal prosecutions of corruption like Jack Abramoff and towards putting a clampdown on pornography.
Wow.
So this guy Acosta has been walking through the raindrops for quite some time. And when Acosta was nominated, the other producer I worked on with, a very accomplished investigative producer, longtime investigative producer named Ira Silverman, we were just floored that this guy was still able to fail upwards. And Alex Acosta is identifiably a political hack. And I am not surprised that he is – has been repaid by Donald Trump, because he has been kind of working that side of the greasy pole for a long time.
Oh my God Almighty! How interesting is that? But you know, I do find Dershowitz to be an absolutely repugnant human being, and I am surprised there is a fellow who was a professor He wrote a book called, I think it was called The Holocaust Business. I can't quite remember his name.
Norman Finkelstein.
Norman Finkelstein. God bless you. Thank God I have you here. You're so smart. Anyway, Finkelstein was a tenured professor.
Yes.
And because of his opinions and views on the Holocaust or minor Holocaust or non-Holocaust, Dershowitz was able to convince the university to sack him.
And Finkelstein could not get jobs after that. And basically,
no, I know.
And Finkelstein, I don't know if both of his parents were survivors or only one survived, something along that line. There was some, or his grandparents. There was a Holocaust history in his family. And Finkelstein just dared to say that maybe the Holocaust was being abused by the state of Israel to justify their treatment of the Palestinians. And
that's exactly what he said. And you know what is also astonishing, and I guess admirable in a way? Most of the people I know who are the brightest and the most informed about the horrors perpetrated by the Zionist state of Israel on the Palestinians, most of them who publish and are opposed to their positions are themselves Jews.
Oh, yeah. No, this is, you know, we have a tendency to believe, because of the way the state of Israel is presented here in the United States, that Israel is a monolithic nation, and it is not. I mean, all you have to do is go to Haaretz, go to the Jewish Daily Forward, go to Mondo Weiss. There is as rich a conversation. You know, my mentor back in college is a former Jesuit priest, and I took a lot of philosophy and religion studies classes with him. And you know, the way we look at particularly the Old Testament is that it's really just an argument among Jews about the nature of God, and that argument about the nature of things, the ability of the Talmudic tradition of argument between from one rabbi to another, is going strong in Israel right now. As a matter of fact, Benjamin Netanyahu is under a great deal of stress and pressure right now, and there have been marches in the street because the corruption at the heart of his administration, particularly in his own family with his wife and his son, and payoffs and Sheldon Adelson and a newspaper that Sheldon Adelson runs, and it runs basically pro-Bibi propaganda for favors from Netanyahu. All of this is an ongoing scandal that is unraveling Netanyahu's grip on power there in Israel right now. But that is not shown here in the United States, because what we see in the United States is that Israel is all of one mind, which Israel is not all of one mind. Now, it has over time ebbed and flowed, and if certainly the Likudite side has had the upper hand politically, but it's a much more complicated issue inside Israel. It's as with everything with the American media, complicated issues are never portrayed. They're basically,
you know, given what a thought just occurs to me. You live in the Oakland area, right?
I do.
In that area, do you have a public access station?
No, public access stations. There may be one on cable. I've left cable a long time ago, so I'm not even sure what public access stations are left. But there are not a lot of a few of them are around because cable, I think cable is still required to have public access open. But a lot of them are now billboards. You know what I mean? Have you seen these? They're channels that just run public service announcements from the school boards. You see the school lunch menus now every now and then. But you know, I mean, here's the thing about – I think I know where you're going with this. I think the thing is, John, is that people in the Bay Area are not necessarily the people that need to hear these messages. Somehow we have to find a way to get these messages to the people.
Yeah, but here's my thought, because the Bay Area supposedly would be more receptive to it. So perhaps you could do it. You are a brilliant producer. You're also a great writer. What if you went through Facebook? Because the only time I find something that shows what's actually going on in Israel over the discord that the country is having over their leadership, and you see the pictures of these huge crowds and you read these interesting articles, I find it on somebody's site who happens to be sympathetic maybe to Palestine.
Right.
Well, you could go through Facebook and you could go through YouTube. You could put together the most interesting hour of the real alternative news, write some introductions to them, and put them together as an hour on a cable outlet show that would not cost you anything. Now, I will say this openly. If you find that you have a cable access show and you would like to do this, I will give you the money to produce. No, I will give you the money to produce the first 10 shows because I think you would create a firestorm that would cause somebody to pick up your show and syndicate it, and you could finally make the halfway decent living you deserve.
Well, that's very, very kind of you to say. Here's one of the interesting things, and there was a story that I think Chris Hedges mentioned it in an interesting piece that I put at the end of the leads in the rundown today. You know, Facebook has been caught deleting posts on behalf of the Israeli government.
Wow.
And Facebook, now they're saying that they realize that they're not always good for democracy. That was one of the statements that has come out of official Facebookdom over the last 24 hours. And I think right now what we're beginning to see is particularly on the part of Facebook, a little bit less with Twitter, but Twitter does it too, and obviously less with Google, because Google is able to hide their efforts more effectively than Facebook and Twitter, that they are beginning to curtail and cajole their news feeds to forestall what I think they feel is coming, which is a potential antitrust effort on the part of Congress to crack down on them for being media monopolies. So I don't know if you've noticed, but Facebook changed its algorithm about 10 days ago. Zuckerberg announced it and he said, yeah, well, we want more user experience. We want more interaction and less posts. Rupert Murdoch issued a statement saying that since Facebook wants to have this trusted content designation, to get this trusted content designation from official providers, they should begin to pay organizations like Fox News and others for trafficking in their web content. In other words, finally paying the creators, because Facebook has been making a huge amount of money off of free content by and large, off of advertising.
Now, but if they crack down though on the media, wouldn't they have to begin with people like Disney and other corporations?
Oh, well, John, come on. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. You think Les Moonves and Iger and all these guys are going to let that happen? No. Let's focus on Facebook. Facebook obviously does need some – there is something going on there, because they're trying to say that we're a social media organization when they're obviously not just a social organization. They're a media organization, but – yes, it wouldn't be something if all of the other monopolies were broken up, like the one that's being currently assembled by Sinclair Broadcasting, because the Trump administration has opened up loopholes for them.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Joe, I'm telling you, your news vandal looks so good. You have wonderful stories today. I love the quotes from the book that you gathered from that fellow. And I see a bunch of ads now. I hope the ads are somehow... the revenues from those ads are reaching. Anyway, tell folks where they can get your News Vandal.
Go to newsvandal.com, sign up, and I got some stories there to read too. And John, as ever, my distinct honor to be with you again this week.
Okay, thanks so much, Joe. And thank you all for listening again. See you tomorrow night at the theater at the main library on Flamingo to watch Chino Minari's talk. And so to all of you, good night and good luck.
In the capital of this nation, 100 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.